And so for me, it really helped me see that leadership is interdisciplinary. So it doesn't matter if you're an engineer, it doesn't matter if you're an architect, you're going to be navigating people who have natural gifts and talents, right? And the best leaders that we know bring those natural gifts and talents out of people. And that's what we want, to create space for people to do that.
That's Dr. Dar Mayweather, college professor and professional speaker for Doing the Good Work. If you're a college student preparing for job interviews in your field of study, you're going to want to work with him. In this episode, we explore the intersection of education, career goals, and leadership development. Dr. Mayweather emphasizes the significance of inclusive leadership training and the transformation in students' leadership styles. So join us as we discuss the essential role of recognizing individual abilities and strengths in achieving career goals. This is the Academic Survival Podcast, and I'm your host, Dr. Chandra McDonald. Statistics show that approximately 40% of students drop out of college every year. In fact, nearly 30% drop out their first year. Well, I am on a mission to improve these stats. Welcome to the Academic Survival Podcast. And today I have with me Dar Mayweather. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Dr. Dar Mayweather, tell us about your background.
So, be totally honest, just excited to just be here, to be able to tell my journey. And to sum it up, move from hall director or HD to faculty in 8 years. So my career started in as a hall director, ran a residence hall. And through that experience, I got a chance to create multiple co-curricular activities that allow for me to create a partnership with the College of Education between student affairs and academic affairs, which created open room for me to be able to learn how to teach. So I learned how to teach at a Division I institution that's very well known across the country, how to teach diversity and inclusion to resident assistants. And then that flourished into me becoming a leadership studies professor, where I kind of help college students understand their natural gifts and talents so that they can get jobs from industry leaders and get noticed by industry leaders before they graduate.
Hey, I want to talk about your hall director experience for a little bit. So tell me about that. Like, how was that? Because usually it's freshmen that are required to live in the dorm. So what was that experience like?
I think for me, I already had a lot of experience just working in housing. I was a resident assistant. I was a graduate assistant in housing. So it just made sense for me to, once I decided to go into student affairs, higher education, that I go into the housing route. For me, it never was about like enforcing the rules and all that stuff, like being that heavy hand. It was more about like, how do we build community? How do we help folks, students especially, get what they want out of their first, second, third years in the residence hall so that they can be ready for the real world? And so that's kind of how we programmed, as me and my student team, around kind of preparing students for the next level, for the next world, right? Of whatever that looked like. So if it was freshmen, then we was preparing them for the sophomore year. If it was sophomores and juniors, we were kind of preparing them for the senior years. And so that's where a lot of those co-curricular courses kind of play a role in my development, because I was able to kind of implement those where students came straight from their room into the classroom in the residence hall. And we will talk about kind of what their goals were, set goals, achieving those goals, and et cetera. And so I've been kind of helping students map this thing out for years. I was a hall director, right? So it's not like an academic advisor or career advisor or those things, but I've been doing kind of that work for a long time. And so I know not much about like residence life experience, but kind of like where I kind of started my journey and how I made sense of how hall directoring helped me be who I am today.
Okay. And then that transitioned you eventually to the position that you're in now. So tell us about that.
Yeah. So, you know, when you can create partnership between academic affairs and student affairs that work and everybody's happy, that's a skill that people don't really know about, right? Because like academic affairs and student affairs usually don't get along that well.
Oh.
Right? So like there's an age-old history to that. So for any college students listening, like know that like the people who do programming outside of the classroom and the people who teach inside the classroom, they don't really talk to each other. So it's up to you to make your experience outside the classroom just as formative as your experience inside the classroom. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I did a lot of work, right? A lot of my work outside the classroom with students was, how do you become a multicultural leader? How do you be an inclusive leader? How do you be a leader that understands justice and equity in your potential industry, right? So what does that look like specific to your industry? And so for me, it really helped me see that leadership is interdisciplinary. So it doesn't matter if you're an engineer, it doesn't matter if you're an architect, it doesn't matter if you're going into hospitality, tourism management, education, you're going to be either working with or working for somebody who's different than you, right? Who has a different identity than you, who maybe have a different lived experience than you, that comes up from a different background than you. And so having abilities to be able to navigate conversations, a lot of tough conversations, but also like community building conversations, supervisory conversations, right? Being able to just say like, hey, you might have a supervisor that's super conflict avoidant, right? But you are the type of person that run into the fire while it's ablaze. And so when you are able to understand that maybe that person is avoidant and you are more maybe competitive, you are able to have those conversations differently about what you need versus being like, I just have a bad supervisor, right? Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of people just default to, when the reality is it's just a difference in style, right? And if you understand diversity and inclusion, all we're trying to do is help you understand and recognize that people have different styles, right? Different backgrounds. And so if you can do that, you become a value add, because now you're navigating conversations with your supervisor and people who are supervised by you or your supervisor, right? Who's different than them, and helping you all make sense of the work that you do, right? And so that's the value add of inclusion and inclusive leadership.
Yeah, that's good. So you specifically do work that is separate from the institution, right? But it's part of developing that diversity, inclusion, what is it? Diversity, equity, and inclusion leadership. So if a student was interested in getting involved with, you know, your work or learning more about what you do, how would they do that? And what services do you currently offer for college students?
Yeah. So, you know, for me, I think it's for college students who are student leaders on campus, you know, whether it's in fraternity, sorority, whether it's in residence hall, residence life, orientation leader, multicultural affairs. I mean, even if you're in a programming role in academic affairs or in your academic college, right? Anywhere that you work with students or work with people, whether it's youth or college students, you should be doing some kind of inclusive training, right? And for me, I'm going to stick to inclusion, you know, just take the diversity, the equity, social justice out. You're going to be navigating people who have natural gifts and talents, right? And the best leaders that we know bring those natural gifts and talents out of people. And that's what we want, to create space for people to do that. But you also want to create space where people feel like they're heard, feel like they're understood, feel like they can get empathy from the people that's in it. So that's the inclusion piece, and that's the leadership piece. And so what I do is, and what I want you to do is go to doingthegoodwork.com/links, doingthegoodwork.com/links, and get the free activity book, right? Where I teach you literally how to do my best inclusive leadership activities. You know, we're talking about helping people understand that we all have privilege and marginalized experiences. Right. I'm a Black person. So, yes, I do have marginalized experiences in my Black identity, but I also have privileged experiences in my male identity. Right. And so I need abilities to be able to share and navigate both of those. At the same time, I also have natural gifts and talents. And what we want is for people to show up in their natural gifts and talents so that they can be the best self in the space with you, right? So they can give the most, be the most productive. They can also be led the easiest when they're using their strengths, right? You know, think about for a student, you know, anytime somebody tried to get you to do something based on your weaknesses, you probably got frustrated got angry, got upset, didn't complete it, didn't commit. It's because you were using your weaknesses. Yeah. What I believe is we get better when we use our strengths. And so that's what I try to teach people.
Yeah, that's good. There's research that shows that when a person could match their strengths and their gifts with the mission of the organization, they have better job satisfaction.
Oh, 100%. 100%. Not even just like a better job satisfaction, you have a better life outside of job, right? Because it doesn't feel like work. Right. You know, you just go and do your thing.
Right.
Right. And you feel real proud about yourself because you just crushed something because you know you're using your strengths.
Yeah.
Right. Like I'm a professional speaker and I'm also a teacher. Right. I'm a professor. Mm-hmm. And so my strengths build on top of each other. When I speak, I become a better professor. When I'm being a professor, I become a better speaker. Right. And so when you're able to utilize your strengths in that way for students, you know, let's say you want to become a sports broadcaster. All right, cool. You got class. So that's one way that you're going to strengthen that.
Mm-hmm.
Another way is to actually go out and do some sports broadcasting, right? Start a YouTube channel or, you know, podcast. Doesn't matter. Get better at it.
Yeah.
Right? Do the thing. Like, actually do the thing. You know, because a lot of college students think that college is on the job training, and it's not, right? You're not going to graduate most degrees in college that you can get. You can graduate without ever having actually did it. Like,
right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, like, I wanted to be a probation officer, and that's why I went to school. And so, yeah, when I graduate, yeah, you're not, you have no experience being a probation officer.
None. And so, you graduate and now you go into a college pool of people, right, who have those experiences, who may have references, who probably have networks, who probably connected with alumni, right? We can keep going. Did internships, all those things. And now that's your competition.
Yeah.
Right? And so are you ahead of the competition or not so ahead of the kind of, you know what I mean? Like, so you need to be able to know that about your own experience. And so when my college students, they leave my class, and especially in the leadership minor, when they complete the whole entire minor,
mm-hmm.
they realize how much experience they either need to get or how much they actually got.
Yeah. Yeah. What are common blind spots for students in this space?
The first blind spot is that students don't think that they're a leader.
Oh, yeah. Right. I could see that. So what does that mean? I don't think I'm a leader. What does that mean?
Yeah. It can mean a lot of things. So it can mean that you're comparing yourself to leaders who've inspired you over your entire life, right? Or you could be comparing yourself to like celebrities, you know, people who have status and people who you revere and wish that you can be like, but you know, you're not them, right? You probably suck at being them. That's what I tell all my students, right? You'll suck at being me. I'll suck at being you. That's why I got to be me, right? And I got to like stick to who I am, and I got to stand in that. And that is what brings the opportunities that's for you to you, right? But you got to do the work. I think another blind spot for students is the fact that they put their leadership in this box. And so if I don't show up and 100% of the issues are solved, I'm not a good leader.
Mm.
Right. So now if you're not solving everybody's problem, then you're not being the best leader. And that's not actually leadership. That's people pleasing.
OK.
Right. I think another thing is that students don't have a definition of leadership. So like they don't even know how to practice it when you don't even have a definition. Like, right. Like you look at leadership as like a position
mm-hmm.
or a person. When it's actually a process that helps a group of people achieve a common goal. And so if you don't understand that leadership is more than just this human being that you love and revere, you'll never find your authentic leadership style.
Yeah.
All right. And so I think those are some blind spots for sure that students were, you know, kind of have to work through.
I remember hearing someone compare, you know, you can be a leader and based upon the authority of the position that you're in, or you can be a leader based upon your ability to influence. And so if you're solely relying on the position, then it's all about authority. But if you can lead through influence, then that at the end of the day makes a better leader. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, so leadership styles, you know, kind of cover that. And one of the questions you can ask anybody if you ever want to kind of like see how they define leadership is ask them, was Hitler a leader? Mm. Right. And depending on if they say yes or no, we'll let you know how they define it.
Okay.
And so if they say yeah, it's probably authority-based leadership. Right. But if they say no, it's probably more ethics-based leadership.
That's good.
And so, you know, there's all those styles that exist, and all those styles are important. You know, I think about a time when I was working as a student leader on, it was the moving crew on campus. So we like move furniture in and out of the housing spaces and stuff. Mm-hmm. Hopefully nobody kills me if they hear this, but they were just lazy. You know what I mean? Like, it was just a whole bunch of lazy dudes, and that just was not me, right? And so one of them days, I was just like, yo, like, if we don't get nothing done, man, I'm just letting them know. Like, I'm just, like, letting folks know, like, yo, this is who on the shift. This is what happened when I got to the shift. Like, this is what was done by the time I got done. This is what was done by the time I got here, right? Like, I was just like, yo, I'm about to just, like, let the authority know. And that day, the next day, and the day before, right? I mean, that day and the next day, right? The productivity was up, right? And so you need authority sometimes to make sure that people are getting the job done, right? At the same time, you might have a situation where it's all about productivity, but then you know, in a similar situation, but you got somebody who got a broke hand, right? And so you, now we're talking about, all right, if I push you, we're gonna further injure you. Right. Mm-hmm. Which could further make a problem for us because we might lose you for a couple weeks. Right. And we have a deadline that we got to meet because this new residence hall just went up. Right. And so it needs to be filled by the time orientation starts. Right. And so those are a different type of conversation that you might need to be having a little bit more ethical background in. Right. Maybe a more interpersonal approach to your leadership.
Right. Right?
And so depending on the scenario, one could need one. And what could need the other? Because think about it like this. Those guys ain't doing nothing. And I come to them and be like, hey, friends, let's just all do better, right? Let's just be more understanding of each other and each other's goals in this work, right? Trying to take an interpersonal approach. Uh-huh. They would have been like, F you, man. We're about to keep doing nothing, right? But as soon as I brought the authority into the conversation, productivity went up. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's good. There, when you're doing your leadership, when you're with your students, when they enter the class, I imagine they come in one way, but by the end of the term, what is the main changes that you see in their leadership style?
I think it moves them away from this idea that leadership is like a monolithic, it's straightforward, it's horizontal line, right? I think a lot of times they move away from this idea that all they need to do is do this one type of leadership, and then that's going to help them become the person that they want to become in their future.
Right.
Most of the time, they're at a point where they're just seeing themselves more raw. And so at the end of 16 weeks, it's like, wow, I went from just figuring out and hearing that I had these styles to now I'm able to articulate the stories that come behind me using these different styles, right?
Okay.
When I'm more leadership focused versus when I'm more management focused, when I'm more trait focused, right? Versus when I'm more behavior focused, when I'm more relationship focused, versus when I'm most process focused, right? So like they're able to determine the scenarios and situations in which they are practicing leadership differently.
Okay.
So which is super important.
Yeah. So it sounds like they have like a bag of tricks.
We all need them, right? Like, you know, I think the most important part of that is like, you realize that you're pulling from the same bag, right? So it's not like, oh, I got, this is my relationship leadership bag. Like, no, your leadership bag has your ability on how you build relationships, and your ability is your ability, right? So if you're more task oriented, that's how you build relationships, right? You give out tasks, you delegate, you make people feel like they're organized. But if you're more like interpersonal related, right? So you want to make people feel like they belong. You want to understand their strengths, their weaknesses, what gives them energy so that you can motivate and inspire them to do the work, right? Everybody does it differently, but yeah, everybody has their own abilities to get things done, right? It's in the same bag, right?
That's good. So then when you are working with students, like what is it that you enjoy most about the leadership transformation that you see?
Ooh, I don't know if I answered this question in a long time. What do I enjoy the most? I think I enjoy seeing students use this. Okay. Right. So like I'm excited to share, right? Like 100% of students who coach with me get the job. 100%. And so it gives me extreme gratification when you are maximizing who you already are to get to where you want to go. So like StrengthsFinder, you know, Clifton StrengthsFinder, like maximizing is my top strength. So,
okay.
Like people sometimes think I'm too much because I'm like, yo, like this is how you can make this better. This is how you can go get it, right? This is how you can be your best self. Like I'm like always cheering people on. I want people to just become a millionaire if that's what you really want, right? Like that's, I want that for you, right? And I want to help you get there. But some people are also like, I'm just good where I'm at, right? Or dang, like you didn't even acknowledge the work that I did to get here and you already trying to push me. And so like in our strengths, we also have to recognize that there's basements and balconies to our strengths, right? There's limitations to even the things that make us special.
I like that, basements and balconies.
Yeah, that's from Clifton Strengths. That's the things that they use to kind of help people understand that like your strengths is not a totality of who you are. It's a understanding of how you exist in the world, right? And so, like I said, for me, I do great at helping people reach their most potential, but also I don't do great at empathizing with people with the work that they already did. And so,
hilarious.
So that short.
Like, I just traveled 100 miles to get here, and you're like, "Hey, let's get
do
100 started."
100 more, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can do 100 more.
More. Yeah. Stop being lazy. You got this. You got.
Yep, that's why my kids they have a hard time satisfying me. They'd be like, "Man, I don't even want to tell you because it's like you're already taking it to the next level." You know. And that's just how I am. I'm wired like that. So like there's places in where that excels, mm-hmm. right? Especially yeah. like sports, that excels, yeah. right? And sports coaching and pushing people, right? Motivating people, that excels, right? But it doesn't excel when you're in interpersonal, empathetic relationships with people, right? So mm-hmm. like my wife, she'd be like, nah. Nah.
Time out. You're not about to coach me up. So with the students, you mentioned something about 100% of the students who work with you get the job. Tell me a little bit about that work that you're doing with the students.
Yeah, yeah. So a lot of times college students have this idea of what companies do, right? They have an idea of what they do. They don't actually know what they actually do. Right. And what they actually do is really based on a few things. One is whatever selling the most or whatever is bringing them the most money. Right. Mm-hmm. And so even with colleges, like, so if this is for the student who wants to go to grad school, right, even grad schools do a thing, but they don't do everything and they don't do everything well. Right. And so, like, you can get a degree in sports broadcasting from a smaller school and think that it's the same value as a sports broadcasting degree from like the University of Florida, right? Let's say you want to even go into college football sports broadcasting and you go to the University of Florida, it's probably going to be a little bit different than going to small 500 person school in nowhere middle of America. Right?
Yeah.
And why do I say that? It's because, like, think about it. Like, how many NFL players went to the University of Florida that probably got a sports broadcasting degree that's probably on ESPN right now? And so think about the students who graduate from that program. They get those connections.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Who graduated from your program? Then the next thing is also like with companies, right? So like it depends on what they do is what they sell the most, what makes them make sure that they don't close their doors.
Okay.
And that could be based off of, for college students, that could be based off of what they think they know about the organization,
mm-hmm,
versus what actually is.
Okay. Right?
And so, give an example. So like media companies, so like let's say ESPN.
Okay.
A lot of people think that ESPN is a sports broadcasting company, but really they're a marketing company.
Okay.
So most of the money that they make is off ads.
Oh.
Right. And so they need to know what their audience likes so then they can solicit the people who sell those products to come and put their commercials on the show. So then you watch the sports show, but then you watch the ad for that show, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what gets them paid.
Okay, I got it.
Right?
Okay, and so you're helping the students with understanding those differences.
You got to, right? Because when you come into the job, you thinking, oh yeah, I just want to help ESPN be the best sports broadcasting show ever. They're already that. So you're not helping them do the thing that they already are doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
What you need to think about is how can you help them attract more ads?
Got it.
See what I'm saying?
Yeah. See, this it's a subtle difference, but it's a meaningful one.
And so instead of saying I am the best at sports broadcasting, you might want to focus more on your personality, on how you attract people to sports broadcasting.
Got it.
Oh. Right? Because everybody got the technicalities down. That's why you went to college. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm,
how do you do it differently? That's what we want to know.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. It's just deep, right? It's deep. Yeah. I mean, and I even think about like folks who want to go to grad school, right? You might have a school that is known for education, but right now in reality, what they're graduating most is nursing students.
Okay.
And so if you're going into education, you need to know that your college might be not as resourced as the program that's graduating the most students, which is giving us the most money.
Yes, that's really good. Yeah.
Right. And so when you're thinking, oh, yeah, I'm going to go into this college of ed because they have this track record, history, blah, 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 of creating these amazing educators. If that's still the case, then why is that? Is it the faculty? Is it the curricular structure?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Is it the specific type of training and classes that you get? Right. And so those are the three things that I help college students look for. If it's like, all right, this is the school that I'm going to go into, the prestige is not the college. It's the faculty, it's the training, and it's the curriculum, right? Because Think about it like this. You go to a smaller school and all of their faculty come from UCLA, Cornell, Yale. You're getting Yale, Cornell, UCLA training.
Yeah.
Right. But if you go to a school that got a whole bunch of faculty who are cool, but they don't come from any of the prestigious universities, that's a limitation in your experience that's going to manifest in your career pursuits. Right. Because my faculty from, my faculty from USCLA, like my chair, right, she has a PhD from USCLA. And so her networks are now my networks.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Right? Everywhere she goes, I go. Right? That's how they should be looking at your faculty exchange. Right? You want to learn from the people who's being the best or connected to the best in the field.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right? And that starts with the people who you learn from.
Yeah, that's good. That's just a whole research angle at pursuing your career and like your pursuits. It's like, okay, so it's not the school that's the closest to you or the cheapest or the it's like, which institution is going to better set me up for the future and the connections that I'm going to need? You know, I had
the least amount of effort.
Yeah, that's good too. Yeah.
Right. Because that's what you're paying into.
Yeah. So I had a friend who, a couple of things, like I had a friend who went to a well-known business college on the East Coast, right? But she didn't at all plan on living in the East Coast. She just wanted to go to what she thought was the best school to get her MBA. And then once she graduated, she's like, in hindsight, I probably should have picked a college on the West Coast because I knew I didn't want to live on the East Coast. So she has all these connections for jobs and locations that she doesn't want to live in. And then I had another friend who went out of state to college for his bachelor's degree. And the goal at the time was like, I'm going to go out of state to school and then I'm going to come back. Cause that's what the scholarship was, right? Go out of state to school and then come back. But because of the connections, right, from that institution, went out of state for college, but then never came back.
Mm.
And he was okay with that.
Yeah,
it was because where you get your, and in many cases where you get your education is basically what you're saying. It's like those connections are tied to those people or those institutions. And so kind of know where you want to land, right? Know where you want to land. And then let's work backwards from like, okay, well, who do I need to 100%. Get my training from?
100%. And like, I try to break it down as simple as I could to help people really understand the process. But the process is really determining on where you want to be and who can best serve you to get there. So like if it's somebody on the East Coast, then it's somebody on the East Coast. If it's somebody in the South, it's somebody in the South. Finding that person is better than finding that program.
Mm.
Because the program is only made up of people who teach in it. For real. And people leave jobs all the time. Like, seriously. And so if you thinking that the prestige of this institution it based off of 20 years ago, or when you first thought that you wanted to go into this program, which might have been in middle school or elementary school or something like that, or even high school, right? You need to make sure that why they are as prestigious is the reason why you're going, and they're still that prestigious in that reasoning, right?
Yeah.
Still today, right?
Yeah.
Because again, let's say like for example, like, you have a program that teaches about like social justice and leadership.
Mm-hmm.
But let's just say that was really only one faculty member.
Oh, yeah, that's really good.
And that one faculty member gets a high paying job at another institution, right? Because they're that amazing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Now that work is gone.
It sure is. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And then some institutions get rocked with some kind of scandal, and
they always try to mimic it because it was so successful. But you can't mimic a person.
Yeah, yeah,
you can't.
Yeah, that's really good. One of the things though that reminds me of is in like the entrepreneurial space. You know, at the end of the day, they say that you're selling you.
Mm.
It always goes back to the person, right? And so I think that what you're saying is, one, like there's two sides to that. It's identifying the people who you want to be best aligned with and following that track. But it's also like, who are you becoming?
Well, you know, that's even taking it a step further, right? Because these folks want to be leaders in industry that create change, right? So what they really want to do is solve problems. And you're not just selling yourself, you're selling yourself through services.
Yes.
Right. So like, what can you do to make somebody else's life easier? That's what entrepreneurs, schools, businesses, nonprofits, that's what they all do.
Yeah.
Right. Everybody's in the business of making people's lives easier. Right. Nobody wants to spend money with somebody to make their life harder. Nobody wants to pay somebody.
Right.
To make their life harder. Nobody wants to hire somebody that's going to make our organization harder.
Right.
Like, and so you need to know what you're selling and what services you're selling, right? To industries to ensure that you get the person, you get the pick, right? You get picked out of whatever the job pool looks like. You need to know. And so knowing what problem you solve and how you solve it,
yeah,
takes you a lot farther than just being like, I'm good at this.
Yeah, that's good. What do you have next? Like, what's lined up for you?
Yeah. Like I said, I'm launching a book. I'm launching a series of books. So this is the first of a few. Yes.
All right. So tell me a little bit about that.
It's called How to Get Along. It's an inclusive leadership activity book. It's a trainer activity book. So it's focused on helping people who want to do this work with communities.
Right? Okay.
And so, like I usually say, like, I transform by helping transform other people. That's how I got to supporting and helping over 150,000 people do inclusion work over my speaking career.
Wow.
Right. And it was because I joined a trainer, and I didn't have the words. I didn't have the knowledge. I didn't have the know-how. And so I told stories of when I did it right and when I did it wrong. Mm-hmm. And those stories led to me being able to, you know, retire my wife. Right.
Oh, wow.
Like, she literally stays home with our son, and we do decent with my salary and what I make with my business. Right. And so the beauty of it, right, is that, you know, you can be a part of this too. Doingthegoodwork.com/links, and you can get the book yourself. Right. Or, you know, join my email list, right, by getting the activities, the free inclusive leadership activities. And you can literally start the journey without having to pay a single dime.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so this is for students, staff, faculty, anybody who's listening to this, right? Like, wherever mm-hmm. you are, inclusive leadership training never makes you worse. It always makes you better, because you get comfortable at being uncomfortable, right? And you're helping other people do that as well. And that's a skill, folks. And people will pay top dollar when you can do that, right? And so join the Doing the Good Work family and join this community, because we're going to be creating trainers that really have the confidence to inspire and educate at the same time.
Awesome. Look at you doing the good work. Dr. Dar.
Entertain and educate, inspire and motivate. Yeah. We're doing all that, because that's what the good work does.
Oh, absolutely. Well, on that note, I am going to close us out. Is there any last minute things you want to say before I shut us down?
You know, doingthegoodwork.com/links. And as always, keep doing the good work.
That's it for today on Academic Survival. If you want to share your story on how you survived your freshman year of college, you can reach me at info@chandralmcdonald.com. We'll be back next week with more ways to survive your academic journey. Until then, happy studying.